How's it sound,
Say, say, say
Say
that
you wouldn't do it to me hard, baby.
Today we're just going to serenade everybody on episode 7 or whatever.
Do you remember anyone here? No, you don't remember anything at all.
And episode numero, how do you say, set?
Siete.
Siete, number 7 here at the Ski Slope. What? Great to see you.
Excellent to see you again. How was your New Year?
My New Year.
Wait, it's September.
Did I have a New Year? You know, like we were discussing on the last go around, getting together with the people you care about is always a nice thing. Mm-hmm. I mix zero religion into it. And it's great. It was great. It was great to see everybody. How about you?
Very nice. Very nice. I had my family over the first night of Rosh Hashanah. And again, not very religious. Right. You know, we basically ate food and that was it.
Totally.
But very... Right.
You accept and you go on through life. But well, nonetheless, I think if you just look at the human, like, what comprises human beings, what our basic desires, needs, understandings are, I think that to think on your own is the more natural way of acting, and that when it occurs that people aren't doing that, it's because to some extent they've allowed themselves to be influenced by something like that, and it's pervasive and takes them over and they have no choice.
Right.
I don't think that's the case though with Judaism and Christianity.
No. No, because they don't proselytize as much. They don't force it on people, but I would think something like a North Korea where, you know, right, it's just the entire society is telling you this is what
right,
you do.
I get that.
That is so weighty. You know, so I think it's almost easy for us from our perspective, and I think we're intelligent and can think on our own, but I think it's almost, we don't have the correct perspective on it because we do live in a land that does give us, like, you don't have to follow this religion. Mm-hmm. You can question it. You're not going to be punished. But what would it be like to grow up in a society where that's not even allowed?
It would be like North Korea.
Right.
And that's what it would be like.
Right.
But I guess that's less perplexing to me because I understand why somebody born in that, I understand even why, like, a Hasidic person born into the level of which to which these people practice, that it's almost you either adopt it or you just you have to like be defiant of your parents at what, and when you're 7 you're really going to be that strong to go you know, defy all that. So I understand why you be adopt it and it becomes part of you.
Convenience almost.
Convenience, but just too difficult to break out of. I understand why that, but I
guess to believe. I you know,
with more general religion, I guess, I don't know, I don't feel as trapped by those sorts of you know, it's the right way to put it, just growing up in that sort of society and growing up in that setup, in that organization. Okay. Anyway.
All right. So I think we're guest-free today, and we wanted to get together because it's been 2 weeks, and I couldn't do it last night, and figured we'd get something together in the late afternoon here, which we're doing. But I think next week, I heard back from Arnie Heller.
Nice.
And I messaged him. I said, listen, we'd love to have you on as a sort of first phone-in guest, because we think that's going to be easier for people to sort of, especially those don't know
who
you are.
You don't think Arnie wants to fly in from Tampa?
I said, Arnie, we got your tickets waiting for you. Just show up at the airport. So messaged him on Facebook and said, listen, we'd love to have you on. I don't know if you've listened. And
has he listened?
I haven't asked him yet. I haven't asked him. I don't know if he has, because I would think not based on the questions he asked in terms of what direction do you want to go as far as what you're asking. I said, listen, it's basically free form. I said, I'm
right,
sure we'll
you
ask
would
you.
Have indicated to you that he's heard it before. Right.
I said, we're going to ask you how you got to Swago. And from there, you know, who knows where it goes.
Talk about
you know,
it.
And that's
yeah,
it. Cool. And I did mention, like, you know what? I know a couple of things were, the Swago story, right? Wasn't he the guy that was sort of in charge of making that movie?
Not 100% sure. I'm sure he was in that era. So this is, we will learn.
We'll get to that major national issue.
Now you know why we need you.
So
still working on the coordination of the end of Swago.
Yes, hopefully by the end of this week we'll have some dates selected.
It's going to be soon. Going to be soon. We're excited about that. The call-in feature I think is going to be nice. We can really bring in anyone, obviously, now that you can do it by call-in.
This telephony thing is the future.
It is. It is. I think this thing could work. So this is exciting. And just every time coming back, we're giddy every time we're doing this. We have to say we hope right now you're listening to probably the best quality tracks we're laying down here.
We listen back, it's like
yeah, right, we'll be fucked. But no, we feel like we have it better. We set it up pretty quickly. We're moving along quickly some way. You know, music's a big part of our lives, and I think, you know, there's this one band that I've just loved, like I've adopted. They're like the Clash to me.
I listened to their album two days ago.
What do you think of that?
I loved it. It was
their new album.
I didn't really like the stuff. I mean, I did like it, but not to the point of like, wow, I'm in love with it. It's the way you are with the earlier stuff. But this one, I was like, wow,
this album, really, really good. My opinion, is the best album I've... It's their best album. So this is their fifth album.
Mm-hmm. Who are we talking about?
Arctic Monkeys are a band.
I'm going to leave you all hanging until we get back from break.
So the band's called Arctic Monkeys. They were basically one of the first internet sensations. Their first album, they were the fastest selling first album in the UK.
Something really?
Like, yeah. All through internet marketing. No label at this point. Like something like 300,000 or 400,000 albums.
YouTube videos of their songs?
Yeah,
is that
just
was it?
Totally
independently
social.
Produced. And
exactly. Oh my gosh. Oh, great. So we have, this is going to be like a call from like a, some fundraiser out in Iowa. Where,
let's see. This,
who? I love this voice.
Let's hear it.
Call from
Aji Bruce.
Aji Bruce?
Aji Bruce is phone.
Oh, Aji must want me.
What year was he? He was a leader, what, 71?
No, Aji now is, tries to get you to sign up for the Daily News.
Does he? Daily News is pretty, pretty hardcore on their call marketing, yeah.
Well, I know they do it. I don't really get it. I didn't know. Right. So anyway, Arctic Monkeys is the band. Their first album was a huge hit, internet-driven. In Europe, they fill up the stadiums. Their first album, amazing. This is 2006 that comes out.
Okay.
Second album.
And how do you hear about them? How do you get turned on to them?
Okay, so I didn't... I hear about them refusing to go to a some type of a world energy-related festival because they were like, this is bullshit because like Bono is flying in on his private jet. Yeah, like they're burning up more shit in the carbon footprint and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I'm like, who are these guys? So I check them out and they had just released, about to release their second album.
Mm-hmm.
So a year later. So I just loved it. It's just two driving guitars, high energy shit, melodic to an extent, intelligent lyrics, a cool sound. You know, when the right band grips you.
Yeah, so no, I know.
Third album, okay. Fourth album, to be honest, I was like, eh.
And that's what happens. Usually that's the trajectory, I feel like, for albums. You know, like once you get to the fourth, it really takes a hit.
So I felt like what they did was it was just taking their first sound.
Mm-hmm.
Second album, they twisted it a little, kept it good. Third, okay. Then by the fourth, it was like, you can't just keep doing that. They come out with their fifth album, and it is different. It's more melodic.
Very well produced.
They live in the U.S. now. They live in L.A. It's a different sound from them. That, you know, it has their roots in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as much just as hard driving. More, it's really great. Mixes up. It sometimes they sound like the Smiths. Sometimes they sound like the Clash. They really have a great...
A little Radiohead.
Radiohead in there. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. And I went to see them last Monday night. I've seen them 14 times now. I love them. And what's interesting is
he's a monkey head.
Very similar to... So I feel like their trajectory is not so off
from
Elvis.
We both stumbled on
that. Trajectory?
We both took two swipes at it.
There's a lot of similarities to Elvis Costello.
Mm-hmm.
First off, Elvis Costello, I believe his fifth album was Imperial Bedroom, which you could argue is maybe his greatest album.
True.
You might not say it's better than the first or second because they were a little different sound, but he changed his way.
I feel like that was the last great one.
It was the last great one, but
it was also really the
first one of a new... It was still the Attractions, but he changed his sound, right? Ironically, I think his name is Pete Thomas, the drummer for
mm-hmm.
Elvis,
mm-hmm.
for the Attractions, appears on songs on the new album for Arctic, right?
So he's like the guy you want on your fifth LP.
Well, I guess so. I guess it is, right? So if that was their fifth, it might have been their sixth. But anyway, loved it. I love their energy live. I love that they're not a big band in the U.S. because
mm-hmm.
I go see them at Webster
Hall,
and it was $4 from my apartment. I just love the energy.
You're not
going
to StubHub to get a seat in the Meadowlands.
Well, if I went to StubHub, it was $80 to stand with everybody else because they, you know, that's bullshit. You can never buy them at first price.
Right.
It's total bullshit what goes on. But loved it. I am so happy this new album is as great as it is, and I think this is unlike what we said about Elvis, where he kind of went sideways. or down. I think that he had a few things after Elvis.
A couple of the live albums were really good.
The thing with Burt Bacharach was kind of cool for what it was.
It was. Did you hear his new album came out yesterday? With
Burt Bacharach?
No, Elvis.
Oh, Elvis. You know, I saw Popkin was posting about that on Facebook.
They played in Brooklyn, yeah.
What's today? Tuesday or Wednesday?
Today is Wednesday.
Okay. I thought that was Monday night, but anyway, because that was the night I was
It was. It was Monday night, and then the album came out on Tuesday.
That was probably
I listened to it. I gave it one go around yesterday. It's good. I mean, it's good stuff, but it's like normally with an Elvis Costello album that comes out since 1983, it's like, oh, this is good, and I'll listen to it one time, but I'll never go back to it for any particular reason, you know? So I felt like this is sort of the same thing. Maybe I will a little bit because it's got a little bit more soul, a little bit more obviously because the roots are on.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, Elvis, I mean, can you write a song that's like not mid-tempo? I mean, he doesn't write...
Everything now is in that same mid-paced kind of song.
It's really like...
I agree, and obviously it's got his voice, it's got his melodic,
and his voice is
awesome
great.
Voice, you know, no doubt. Tying that together further, the last time Arctic Monkeys appeared in New York was a year and a half ago, May, you know, from around Memorial Day. It was near my birthday. Mm-hmm. Two nights earlier, Elvis Costello played, and he called up. Alex Turner came on, who's the lead singer of Arctics, and did Lipstick Vogue with Elvis.
Yeah, very good Elvis song.
Right? How good is that, right? Yeah. So that was what, and you know, I would say, you know, I've lived in New York City basically since college, and of all the things to take advantage of in this city, you've got the restaurants, you know, but freaking live music.
Right.
If you like music, what a fucking great place to live. And especially if you're into, well, no matter what you're into. I mean, if you're into the bigger stuff and you're cool with loving to go to...
Your access to live music in Manhattan is greater than anywhere else.
And I just love that the kind of music I like is available for me in the kind of venues that I like where... You just go and you're in, you know, you're with
the band.
I love it. I love it. It's like the old days. See, for me, this is like us at what the hell?
The Ritz or one of those.
Well, where did we see psychedelics? What was that?
I forget.
Irving Plaza. Just these little places that.
Right.
There was so much more intimate. It's such a great, better show, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a different thing than going to a stadium or even an arena. You know, it's.
You know, I was holding off on this. I was curious to hear what you thought about. It's called AM, the new Arctics album. But I've been listening to it like nonstop since it came out. I'm gonna say to you that it is my favorite album in the last 5 years. I don't know an album that.
Ladies
I like
and gentlemen,
better than that.
Alan has proclamated. His favorite album is an album that's
at least
came out.
Last 5 years. So I welcome you all to go check out AM Arctic Monkeys.
It is
awesome
good.
Shit, and they're playing all over the country, all over the world. You should see them.
It's funny on Rhapsody the other day. I was in my car, so you know their mobile interface. They changed it like a year ago, so now they give you like new releases like on the bottom.
Right.
Like and Arctic Monkeys showed up, so I'm like, oh, there's Alan's band. Let me give it a listen to. And I was really into it. I was really pleased. I got every song kept it going.
Every song's good.
Yeah.
There's nothing on it that's crap, and it mixes it up all over the place, too. I like it a lot. Cool.
So I give it two thumbs up for Arctic Monkeys.
Nice. Very important for me. Very important. you know, we'll have our, you know, we love music, both of us. Howie and I have just been big music fans.
Listening, making.
Making.
Talking about it.
Howie, can I throw this out there?
You can throw
it. Do it. Don't do it. But
anything about the murder you can throw out there.
Anything. I think that when we finally figure out how to take our 4-track and turn it back into music, because the lo-fi technology
we use is going to set the world on fire.
No, I think we release it here on the ski slope. We play one of our songs.
Oh, really? All right, I'd be into that.
And if we can't, maybe we record one of our ski. This was ski slope time when we were doing this stuff.
This was.
What year was it? When did we do it? In college?
It was the summer of 85.
All right, so a couple years out of.
We spent a summer at NYU, which was a great thing to do.
Awesome.
Like just to sort of, I'll take two or three classes at NYU.
You took two, I took one. Take a class and get a
dorm room.
Get a dorm room. Live at NYU.
It was a great summer. It was a great
fun. Our boy P-Fine there.
P-Fine. We should get him on here, man. He'd be fun.
He'd love to come on.
Would he?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. He lives around the corner.
I saw he just had some, one of his bands, I think, just signed to do the background music for one of the Apple
Is that what he was posting on there?
I think so. That's a big get, man. Have Apple use one of your band songs?
Absolutely. I think he's doing well. He's licensing music for commercials, TV shows, movies. It's cool. Totally. He's a music guy.
All right. So let's bring him on.
Yeah, totally.
Talk to me about the future of the ski slope.
Exactly. He's on the...
Public Enemy.
He's on the first album right at the end. He was a DJ at NYU and... They just put a little snippet of him on there.
How great was that? Like, that sort of, like, so confirmed our sort of adjacent musical likes. because we went like from the Clash together, then into sort of that REM stage. Which, if I look back, like I feel everyone feels the same way about REM. I was like, I milked it for all it was worth.
Yeah.
But when PE came out,
I love them.
And we went all of a sudden 1987. It just switched from like rock to hip hop.
Right.
It just totally moved.
And we were into like,
and that was it.
PE, Eric B, and Rock.
Didn't buy a white guy for like 6 years. Exactly. Maybe the Beastie Boys. You know?
Well, they were fucking awesome too.
They were great.
And funny, we were talking about on Facebook about in my so when I moved down to the Village a couple of years out of college, one of the other tenants was the Prime Minister Pete Nice, who was half of the band third bass.
Third bass. The other great white group. There's like Vanilla Ice, Beastie Boys, and then third bass.
Goes the Weasel. And I happen to have met, you know, Brett Ratner is?
Yeah.
Okay, big time director. I guess Pete Nice and MC Search had gone their own ways, and Pete was trying to make his own thing happen. And I'm going into the building, and Brett Ratner, who I don't know who it is, some guy, is at my building trying, he goes, he's like, any apartments for sale in here? And I'm like, you know, actually, I'm thinking of selling my apartment.
So you don't know who he is? He's just
not a clue. Some kid at NYU, you know, from NYU. No idea who it is. This is in 1989 or whatever. So for some reason, I was thinking about selling my apartment. So I'm like, well, come up, take a look at mine. I was actually thinking about possibly selling it. So he comes up and he just has this video in his hand. He's like, hey, you want to check this out? And I'm like, well, what is it? He goes, yeah, I'm here to go see the Prime Minister. I just did his first video. So I'm like, sure.
Yitzhak Rabin?
So yeah, Prime Minister Pete Nice. So I'm like, sure, let's check it out. So I see the video. I don't really remember it. Hey, cool, blah, 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 whatever. That's it. We go our own way. And then I guess I saw his early work, dude. He came, went on to be about as big a director as you can do out of it. He does all the big action shit.
Prime Minister's solo career.
Prime Minister's career didn't benefit from the greatness of Brett Ratner's directing and skill, but that was my, that's a, that was one of my early hip hop stories.
Yeah. I later read, and I got front because I threw it up there when you were commenting on a Libra Bounce thing, is he did. He got some sort of legal problem. He got into baseball memorabilia. I think he started like a, Prime Minister this is, he started at the, Negro Baseball Hall of Fame.
What does that mean? So he's a white guy who wants to get into rap, and now he's going to be fake that he's a black baseball player?
Yeah. So that was happening. And he was getting, like, I don't know, he was getting good press and respect for that. And then, well, some 5 or 6 years later, it winds up he's, you know, having problems selling counterfeit baseball merchandise.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Same. Am I saying, wow, great intermission? Have you switched it up a little? Are we still sticking with that same
I feel the pressure. Sticking. I guess I got to come up with some new mixes, man.
Not at all. I love that. Absolutely love it. Keep it rolling for a while.
You know, that was fun to put together. So, cause I figured I wanted to just learn the software for purposes of doing stuff like that. And then once you have it, it's like, oh, that's fun. So, yeah, we'll whip up some new stuff, maybe.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So where do we leave off, Gwen?
We were talking about Prime Minister Pete Nice getting into
it was a memorabilia thing.
I will say, going back to like Beastie Boys, though, I say like the one death that really rocked me, in terms of its, you know, contemporary feel, was MCA. Like,
yeah, me too.
Like, when he died, like all of a sudden, see somebody in like their years, like, you know, the end year is 19, you know, the beginning year is 1964.
Yeah.
And it's not like some freaky, tragic kid accident thing, but it's just like, all right.
Look at this age.
Yeah, his body fell.
It's scary, you know.
Yeah.
You wonder how much you want to actually talk about that personally, you know, like. You can't control that shit. Like, do I really want to sit and think about it?
Yeah.
Like the unknown coming up out of the blue.
You need to contemplate it because it's like, you know, because you don't want to get there because it's going to happen.
But there was now is what you're saying. That's what do I want to, if you were going to, this is what I don't want to do.
Come. All right.
If a human, not you, learned that they were going to die in 2 days, would you want to know right now? Let me rephrase that. Yes, you'd want to know now because you want to do some things. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing you could really do about it. So would you want to be thinking about it for the month or 2 months leading into it just in case you're going to learn in 2 days you're going to die? What's that month before worrying about that going to do for you?
I think knowing that, because you can always sort of say time is precious and try to have that perspective, but I don't know.
You think by thinking about it and just continuously recognizing how valuable each moment is. Sure, I'm good with that.
And I think there's a way, I think if that's real, it's a lot different than it's sort of let me pretend that that's real, which I think everybody does. I've done that, from like pretend right now I was,
on the verge of death.
I had 6 months to live. Like, what would I do? You know, and so you got to do that, I think, to have perspective.
I do this fucking podcast. I could tell
do
you
this
that,
too,
bro.
Yo. I do this podcast thinking that I'm dying. That's how strong it gets.
That's how much fun we're having.
I'm gonna change the topic.
Anyway,
dude,
so. let's segue right
we got
around
a
now.
Death phobia.
Oh, Jesus. I'm like Richard Lewis right now.
Oh no! God, oh almighty. No! All right, let's bring it back to the light stuff.
Yeah.
You know, cool. I love puppies.
Yeah. Who doesn't love a good puppy? Have you seen any bands lately that you?
No.
Have you gone to live music lately?
I haven't. You know, I told
you. Well, you did. You did. You and those guys.
I saw the Black Crows back in April. They're good, and they were particularly good this time because I've seen them a couple times where it's. I don't know. It sounds like it's one long blues jam, and it doesn't quite work.
It doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, but this time it was, you know, the tight 3-4 minute songs, good rock songs, and no, it worked out very well. You know, like we said on the first podcast, live music to me is it's a bit of a hassle. You know, and people are like, oh, you suck. You know, but I'm like, yeah. I've always had show gremlins by me that are too drunk and falling over. And
really,
Yeah. So it's always I always feel like, you know, it's just music. Like I can hear it, and sometimes it's fantastic. Like if I will say, not to be sort of part of the crowd, but if you go to a Springsteen show and everybody's up and dancing and singing the words together, there's something incredibly powerful about that. You know, there's something very communal about that. But just the aesthetic of hearing the music itself, which I don't know how much you can even separate that from the communal experience. Yeah, you know, I can appreciate that in you know, in my own home.
Interesting. Do you watch Palladia? Do you have that on your cable?
I think I do.
It's just all live music shit.
Yeah, you know what? I saw the Stones live.
It's good. They have a lot of, you know, they have all the festivals. They have it on there. It's good. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. Thanks. Yeah. I don't agree with
that's
you.
That's how though. I like live music on Palladia.
Well, it's... I don't agree with you. I find
people don't.
You know, it's kind of like a comedian, like an average comedian on TV is like, what the fuck am I watching this guy for? But you go live,
and sometimes
they're funny. Just being there, it's funnier. It just gives it a degree of funnier.
But how much of that is like because on a plane, it's funnier too. Like on a plane, you'll sit and you'll watch some ridiculous movie. And you hear people laughing, and it's like, there's no way these people, if they were watching this movie at home, they'd be laughing.
I don't know.
And if they were, then I'm disgusted with humanity.
I think you overestimate your fellow man.
So much for that.
Why do they, at least I know it's true with me, I see it with others all the time, why do people really enjoy drinking Bloody Marys so much on an airplane? For some reason, others order Bloody Marys at a disproportionate rate after 11 o'clock. A.M. on an airplane.
Well, I think it's the only drink you can have, and I feel this too. Like this is almost like North Korea in a way, like society's pressure. Like it's the only drink that's sort of acceptable before noon. You know that or
no time, but before noon.
Okay,
people drink them at
a disproportionate
rate in general on planes. Now, I get that for the morning, and I always every time I order a Bloody Mary, I kind of like it. They make it spicy, but then I'm like,
I
really need to go through all this heaviness to get a drink? Like it's just so thick and heavy.
It's like a
fucking meal. I don't want
breakfast. It's funny. I don't. If I'm on a plane, I'll have the Bloody Mary, but again, only before noon.
What do you go for? What's your plane drink? Which you shouldn't really do on a plane.
I know.
You're dehydrated.
Ladies and gentlemen, please don't
drink.
Brought to you by
Fly the Plane.
So I go for a scotch and maybe a wine. You know, if I'm going to actually eat the meal with it, I'll go for like a wine.
Yeah, that's what I'd go for too. Is it? I mean, I don't want to get on this track because it just sounds like it's so obvious and I don't know, just so obvious.
What's with flying?
That's kind of what I'm about to say.
Oh, okay.
The quality level of the service you get on an airplane is unbelievably bad.
It's deteriorated.
Deteriorated isn't even the word. If you used to fly to Europe, you would get like a good meal. I remember I used to go. I looked forward to it. It was in business class. So I'm accepting that. But it was a good meal. It was like, wow, good wines, everything. Mm-hmm. You go to L.A., even Continental, it doesn't exist. Used to give you the sundae. You know, used to get all... Now it's a joke. Like
it's like conflictual now. Like everyone's not on the same side. It's all of a sudden now there's like the passenger side and there's the stewardess side. And they're in conflict as opposed to sort of like, all right, we're all going to work.
They can't serve you and like do the right thing.
It's and then you get the one person that is nice, but she's like, or he's too nice. It's like, I don't want to have a whole conversation. Like, just, you know, pour me my soda. But
you know what? They have to move, so I don't find that they can ever stay too long.
That's true. That's
okay. Bad, if a flight attendant, whatever, starts to talk to me, which happens every so often, it's never going to last more than 2 minutes.
That's true. No, I'm always nice, believe me. I'm never like, shut up. Walk down the aisle. I found this too. Like I find now, like if I go shopping in stores, like if I go to like a,
I know where you're going.
Like the sales help. Like
leave me the fuck alone.
Has anybody done a study where they said, you know what? Let's just put our salespeople on a bench, like on the side, and if somebody needs them, they'll come over and say, hey, can you help me out? That would, to me, be so much more conducive than feeling like I have to, again, like I'm in conflict. Like,
well,
I
you understand
like
why
I'm avoiding eye contact.
It's not because they go, my natural instinct is I should just attack you immediately and say, can I help you if you need anything? They're all commission-based now.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it's a rotating thing. Whoever walks up to you wins you.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually will just, you know, I say what you say, I'm sure. I'm just like, I'm looking. If I need anything, I'll let you know.
Oh, if you need anything, my name is
Kevin. My name is Chuck. Come and find me.
And then it's like,
Chuck,
his name.
You know it, buddy. I'll come find you.
Man.
Just get out of here.
My man.
And it's just, that's what it is. And I know it's, you know, my immediate reaction is yours. Like, get the fuck out of my face. Like,
I walk in and it's like, especially if the store's not crowded and the guys are just all standing there and they're just like, they eye you. And it's like,
You're like a fucking piece of meat for them. No, they're like, they're the hawk. They're the vulture.
I feel very vulnerable.
You do.
So, yeah.
Just don't let any of them address
that process, if a retailer was so bold, they could change that process
around a little bit. They do group commissions so that it doesn't matter.
Or just, again, just keep them.
I'll give you another little pet peeve I have that's similar to that. The vast majority of restaurants in New York City will not pass the bar tab over to your table tab.
Get straightened right there?
Yeah, and I'm not, you know.
In the suburbs, you can get away with that.
A handful of places in the city do it, and I always appreciate it. And I'm not quite sure what the logic is. It's like, I don't know how the tips would be any different. If you pass it over, I'm going to put my 20% or whatever on top of the liquor.
Right.
Share it with the bartender.
Unless you somehow think the bartender would get a lesser or greater tip, that it shouldn't be just on a flat percentage.
What they've answered to me when I ask why they can't do it is because their answer is that it's not that easy to connect you to the... It requires us to do something when you leave here to connect it. But meaning that I don't know your name, I don't know what table you are... But I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
You're seating me at a particular... Use your table as the field that identifies, that links me to the bar.
Oh, are you eating here, sir? Yes, I am. Great, let me put it for your table now.
Right. Because, right, they have that reservation system where it's tables.
It doesn't matter to me.
Have some signifier.
It doesn't matter to me what level every reservation system has that embedded now, because it's simple to fucking do, embedded into everyone, right? It's not an excuse for me that you don't
have it, okay?
Right. And you think as a customer... that what I want to do is take my card out two times in this evening and pay you twice and go do that whole thing. It's not that big of a deal, but it is. It's a huge deal.
Especially dropping, like, you know, all of a sudden now I've dropped $52 for like two drinks, and it's like, you know, with the tip on the bar now, you know, now you're sort of, you know, hindering how much food I'm going to order if you're a cheap bastard.
Well, I'm going to follow you on that part of it.
Because usually when you go to a bar, if you go to a restaurant and have two drinks at the bar,
yeah,
it's always a little more than you expect the drinks.
You know,
right?
I
mean, it's always like, you always...
I'm fucking numb to
maybe,
it here
maybe,
in New York City.
Right.
It's
so,
always 60
but I'm always like, shit, man, if I bought that bottle of, you know...
Well,
Johnny Walker Black at my home,
you
and
also
like,
grow your own corn.
Nah, it's just calculations that go on. You're like, so it already puts you off. So yeah, if you could pay at the very end, and then it's like you're out.
So that's what you're just saying from a psychological perspective.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, why drop money before you have to? Like, it's all going to be
just
the same.
A cheap bastard, and you're meeting four other people. You want to make sure your two drinks get covered by the other four people as well.
That's the move, right?
Yeah, it is. That's the.
Nah, there's always that.
I have some friends that would do that.
Really? And it's noticeable that they will do that.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe they do it accidentally, though.
You know, it's like that guy who maybe you have three friends and two of you, three of the four of you, of the total people, are always willing to pick up the drinks and pick up the first one, and that fourth person is only there for the fourth one when it's his turn.
No.
Then you'll sometimes get tipped.
Oh, no. That would be the worst thing. Like, what are, you know, that's not the worst thing.
I think
thing
most people who are that way are not aware that they're that way.
Well, that's the thing. Then they're not that way to that degree. I mean, they're that way negligently, which is not the same as sort of consciously being like, shit, I don't want to pay this. Let me get out of this. You know?
That would be kind of terrible if
they're
like
be awful.
Purposely just going, fuck my friends and I want to be out of this.
But it's almost, that's like a nice thing for like cheap people to think that it's not intentional. It's just...
Well, it's convenient.
It's convenient.
if it's willful ignorance of it, it's not acceptable.
Right.
If it's truly ignorance, then...
I will say though, like I hate getting...
I don't admire it, but I guess I
you know
can deal
you
with it.
You know when you take like a couple out and it's like the other, one guy's birthday or the wife's birthday and everyone's got to figure out like who's going to do what and somebody tries to be bold and says, don't worry, I'll take...
How do you treat all that? What do you think the right way to do that? Friends going out with sometimes,
you know,
because
I'll be the guy to volunteer sometimes and be like, I got it, you know, and I'm totally happy to do that, you know. But then when somebody else says it, like all
you don't
of a sudden,
feel comfortable doing it,
you know, all of a sudden then it's like, oh, should I at least offer and have them deny me one time? There's such a dance that goes on with that.
My preference would be, you know, and I get it because everyone operates usually under one side or the other. You have people who are just like, no, split it evenly.
Yeah,
like,
people lose their mind
every
about
time.
It. Right.
All right, well, you have a few groups. You have the general calculated every time. General, hey, I got this one, you got that next one.
Yeah, if it's one on one, if it's two people, if it's two sides, two couples, two people, then it's totally, that's totally fine. It's when it becomes more than that that it gets difficult.
If you and if the Suego boys mm-hmm. were regular diners out, the
CT,
five, the six of us,
the CT boys,
I meant, not the Suego boys, the CT group.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say we regularly went out for dinners. I would be okay with, like, who's got it this time.
Yeah, that would be easy.
I like that. That's how it should be. Who gives a fuck if you're off by a little bit? And you know what? Even in those scenarios, and I'm not saying it exists in our particular group,
mm-hmm.
but let's say there's groups where maybe there's a guy in the group who can't. You want him to come along, but he doesn't have, the money. He's a mailman. He doesn't have the kind of income that others have. The group picks him up the time. Fuck, who cares?
Right.
Who cares?
Right.
Then you have the people, like we were saying, who want to just split it generally. But then you have the fucking people.
The psychos.
Who think that, oh, come on, my wife didn't have an appetizer. You want me to pay less for this whole
thing? You
want me to pay the equal amount?
I got to say, it's been years since I've run into a cat like that.
That happens every now and then, really? Right? I haven't either.
I mean, it's been a long time. I mean, I remember it. I remember one incident happening like that, but it's been a long, long time. I can't say, like, since I've moved to the suburbs.
That you've had any of those.
That I've had anybody that's like, been that crazy about it.
Well, given that most of the...
But I do have guys that are like, they get angry about it. Either way, like, about? I got it. You know, either the I've got it or, like, I need to sort of
Here's
contribute
the rule.
If you say
Howie,
I got it.
You're in a group. Someone says to you, I've got it.
Mm-hmm.
You should say, oh, come on, let me
contribute
to it.
Exactly, this is the dance.
He says no. There's no dance. You're right, but this is the dance.
It's all dance.
Howie, I've got it.
Right.
That's it.
That's where I'm like, okay, cool.
Thank you so much. That's very generous of you.
Right.
End of conversation. If I'm just going, I got it, but I'm like, come on, guys, where are you? It's just my way. Hey, I got it. And you go, hey, I'll thump. All right, you know what? Let's split it three between us guys. Although, quite frankly, I don't know why you need to do the passive-aggressive thing. If that's what you believe,
mm-hmm.
go, hey, guys, let's split it three ways. Let you say what you want to do.
Right.
But if
exactly.
you say, I got it, you should want to get
I'm
it.
I'm with you. I would walk away from that a little bit sort of like, oh, that was weird that he sort of offered and then bowed out at the first. It's almost like saying God bless you when somebody sneezes. Like that when somebody says, I'll pick it up, you have to make that offer to sort of be like, no, I'm coming. But then when they sort of deny you're sort of coming
it's exactly then
that's
what I said.
It.
I got
that's
it. Can
it's,
I pick?
That is.
No.
Ladies
I've
and gentlemen, Ski Slope has just broken down the whole protocol to check picking up.
We discussed, realized, you know, you put, I've discussed, I don't know if we talked about it on the Ski Slopes. We've got picking up the check. Now we have waiting to hold the door for people.
Let's do this.
Okay. I have a very interesting entrance into my lobby. As you know,
mm-hmm.
you basically walk a really long
way.
It's
a wormhole.
You have to put on like coal mining gear with the light. So you have to walk down a long hallway
mm-hmm.
to get to my elevator. So if you're waiting for the elevator,
it's gotta be a pain in the ass.
You see back, there could be somebody walking 5 feet away, 50 feet away, 100 feet away. Who are you supposed to hold that elevator for? What's proper protocol? Now, I used to think, if you don't mind me just saying
do it,
whatever, because I face this. I used to think that I should be defaulting to holding the elevator for somebody.
If you see them...
If they're within a few feet, obviously I'm holding the elevator.
Okay.
However,
how far out do you go? As far as if you see them at all?
Okay.
Like,
if they are beyond a distance where it's like they... If they're beyond, like, let's say, like 30 feet, where it's like I have to hold it for them and it's the wait a time,
mm-hmm.
I don't believe I have the right to, because two things. Number one, they may not even be getting on the elevator. They could be going out the back
right.
door.
Oh,
number one.
I'm going this way.
And then when they go even further back, you could be going over to our mail area. So I believe the onus, once you are outside of a small range.
Well, what is that small range?
10 feet.
Okay.
10, 12 feet where it's going to hold
that's the
things
issue.
Up.
Yeah.
15, 20 feet. Mm-hmm. You know, go by feel. If it's an old lady, if it's a fast walker, you might. But it's just they have to be about right there. Looks like we've got another caller. And beyond that, they have to speak up and say, can you hold the elevator
well,
for
here's,
me?
Well, here's what I'd like the rule to be. Oh, we'll get right to it.
Wait, hold on. Hold on, let's see who's calling. Let's see. Oh, she gave up quickly.
Damn. She decided to call back.
She's blocking her name now.
Uh-oh.
Call.
It got out there. We'll have to listen back. We'll
That's
have to
funny.
Knock out our noise.
Let's go. Let's fucking harass them. Bastards call us during our podcast.
So here's what I'd like the rule to be, because it's like the only objective rule, is if you're in the elevator and you've pushed your floor, you don't have to hit the open door button unless the person going to the elevator says, can you hold it for me?
Well, I 100% agree with that. But what if you're waiting for the elevator and someone's feet away? Oh, you get in the elevator.
If you get in the elevator, you don't have to hit door open unless somebody says, can you hold it for me?
That's what I'm right. agreeing with you completely. That's okay. the rule.
But it's not. I mean, I'm like, I'll...
Not anymore. I found the confidence now. I'm like, speak the fuck up if you want me to hold the elevator. Mm-hmm. Don't make it my onus to hold
Bitch,
the elevator.
Bitch, there's stairs.
You're a little overweight. You could use the stairs, lady.
There you go. No, I'm with you. And door opening too. Like
I always it's like open that whole, door for people.
But,
actually,
sometimes it's annoying for the person that you're holding it for because now they're sort of forced into this rush mode of like all of a sudden they break into that little jog, you know, to get to the elevator or the door because you're holding.
I guess
it for
I
them.
Generally
like, oh,
won't
lose,
hold
lose.
It for somebody who's not pretty much right there.
I guess that's it. That should be sort of the rules. Like if the other person doesn't have to, well, again, it's all subjective. But if they don't have to break into a quicker strut to get to your, if they don't feel the obligation of
And for me, my decision whether to hold the door or not. Is greatly weighted based on what the girl looks like.
Oh shit!
I'm just kidding.
Well, it's funny. I always thought
I'll wait for 100 feet. It's just pretty good.
Here's a thought I had that like that whole thing about guys holding the door open for women was just sort of this like.
No, I'm good with it. It's just
no, but it's a way to like stare at their ass in a way. It's like you get to hold the door open. So I think the guy whoever came up with that
wasn't being chivalrous.
Maybe he was.
Does chivalry mean I want to look at your ass?
Well, all of a sudden you get this like you know this pretty good view, and the person's just walking out the door. They're not going to look back over their shoulder.
You know, if I go out on a date, like on a you know first time meeting a girl. And it hasn't happened in a while, but I'm always happy if they, I have to go to the ladies' room. It's like, okay, good.
You get that moment to yourself.
Well, you're not looking at me, and I can look at you and see what you actually look like.
Right? I think there's a bright light over there as you walk under. Oh, all
right. Man, you haven't done
I don't know. It's been a while, brother.
I was going to say, you haven't done it. You've been with the same ladies
since
God, you were.
Thank God, man.
You're down with that. Like, yeah. But dating's a funny fucking scene.
It's got
a funny thing. View it as like, you know, and I'm not an aggressive, certainly through stages in my life, I might have been more of an aggressive dater. I'm not, at this point, I'm not dating, but I look at it like, you're meeting somebody, what's the big deal? You have dinner with someone.
Yeah, once you take the pressure off of it, once it becomes not like, I'm looking for a husband, I'm looking for a wife, or somebody to spend the rest of my life with. You know, once you take that pressure off of it, then yeah, then it's just a nice way of meeting people, you know?
I don't believe that for the vast majority of people who are active in the dating scene, single people over 30-something, I don't think they're thinking the way you just said. Excuse me one second. we'll try and edit that out, sorry.
So they're not looking for a life.
No, they are. I think they are. Okay. Like, most of them are not just going out, like, trying to meet nice people.
That's...
As they should be.
Again, I will say, like, right, as they should be, and I think part of that is... You know, I don't know. Is biological that's what you want? But part of it could be sort of that North Korean, you know, thing where it's like that's what we're sort of raised to think is the way to be.
And there's a book that Joe Rogan has the author on every now and then called like
Sex at Dawn.
At Dawn, and I frankly I read the first 20 pages and it gave you the gist of it, and I just didn't keep going. But I want to go reread what they were saying. But they were saying before we went to being gatherers, like when we were hunters. Everyone would hook up with everyone, but when we became gatherers, we didn't. We became a nuclear around our families. I don't know why. Every time I say that, I don't know the immediate logic of what being a gatherer.
I think you're right about that, but I don't know why
is gathering,
shift
right? I'm going to go back and check that out for our next podcast.
And that guy, like, he's an interesting guest. I like when he's on, but he says that, like, monogamy and being with one person, like, that's a complete fiction. And you see, when people say stuff like that, like, I remember there was a, what's her name? Goldie Hawn's daughter. What's her name?
Goldie Hawn's daughter, Kate Hudson.
Kate Hudson. Like, she's, you know, she and Jennifer Hudson, Jennifer Aniston, like, they're the two people that are constantly in these women magazines, which, you know, my wife sometimes gets so I see. So anyway, she was another one that was, like, ranting against monogamy, how, like, it's fake and it's a fiction. And it's just like, I respect somebody that says it is for them. But, like, for me, it's like, I'm a hardcore monogamist, you know? I'm sort of like, thank God, you know, that's what I have and that's that. And I wouldn't trade that for anything. And I may be in the minority about that.
No, I
probably am, you know?
I think I hate to say this, but I think the vast majority of marriages seek and desire to have what you and Sue have. And obviously, I've known you forever, and I know your whole history. And I say to people often, I've told you this before.
You have.
You know, I say to people often
nice.
That...
I like hearing
it's a nice thing to hear.
It is.
That, you know, I don't know that many couples where they're like, these two are two peas in a pod. Like, they just belong together, these two people. And in such a natural way, in such a no, they should never be with anyone else. Like, that would be crazy. Like, these two people belong together. And interestingly, I would, you know, and I certainly have many friends who have excellent marriages, but interestingly, the CT group, it's surprising how, you know, half of well, the majority of us, other than me and my brother, though, was in the same thing. Basically met their wives really early on.
Yeah.
Lenny, your brother, met Lenny his wife in high school. Mm-hmm. You the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was Talin. She was a great neck, right?
Well, it's funny. There's she was a great neck.
So they were, but they met in high school.
They met in high school.
Was it through Libby?
It was. She was in. She went to Great Neck with Adam. I think they went to like Talia's prom was their first.
All right. So they met young. You met Sue Young. Libby met his first wife young, but then even Amy Short. You know.
Sure.
Then same with Johnny. Mm-hmm. Mark met his wife young. Mine was a little later, but I guess I look at the relationships for the CT, the Swago people, and I think they're more on the average more wholesome and right than some right. of the breadth of that I see from the rest of my life.
The rest of the world.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's sort of, it's forced upon people. Like, it's almost like there is this thing like, oh, guys cheat and everybody cheat. And that's sort of the thing.
Everybody
like,
doesn't cheat. That's not true.
I know. It's like, but it's almost become a generalization. Right. And it's not total.
Just because it's not one in 100 people. It is more than that.
Of course.
But the idea that it's like everybody cheats is not accurate. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, yeah, more than one in 100 does. I get it. But it's not everybody by any stretch.
Right. And again, to each his own. You know, it's like, I'm not going to be judgmental, I guess. Even if like a couple had like an open marriage and they were like, well, this is, you know, we're accepting of this. This is what we do. All right, great. More power to you. But like, I mean, I would not say like, well, listen, you could sign on the dotted line here and we would change your relationship into something more like that, or, you know, give you the head to go to Las Vegas and do whatever you want to do, or even something greater than that as far as like something on the side. I'd be like, no, you know, it's like,
Why
would I want that?
Yeah, why would that be okay?
Yeah, no. So,
I hear you. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
So that's the soft side of me coming out.
We'll be right back.
Hello.
Awesome that you got Grubby to do that.
Right.
To play that horn for us, man. Where's Mark Grubstein?
Was that his first name, Mark? Yeah, it was, right?
Yeah, it was. M-A-R-C.
M-A-R-C. I always thought your brother was M-A-R-C.
Yeah, he was. And Mark Hammer was, I think.
Yeah. It's funny, the Marks that are with the C versus the Marks with the K.
Here's my guess. I was asking the question and I just answered it for myself. I guess if your full name is Marcus, you're M-A-R-C.
You think?
Well, I would think if you are Marcus, you are M-A-R-C.
If you're Marcus, I don't think every Mark with a C is a Marcus.
I would think you're right about that, yeah.
Marks with the Mark Hammer? Grubby?
Are you Marcus? We want to hear. Post it on Facebook.
Please, let us know.
People.
We'll have to tag him now. Tell him to look at the...
So it's been a pleasure like talking social norms with you today.
You know, really, a little bit in the middle. Like, not quite, you know, Swago basketball, not quite religion, but, you know, holding a door open for a person.
A solid balance. Mm-hmm. Solid balance. You know, I think there is this weird...
Mid-tempo Elvis song.
I saw somebody post on Facebook something to the effect of, like, all right, somebody brushed me in the street when we were walking by. Not knocked me over, just brushed me lightly. And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. I'm like, you don't have to say you're sorry to everything. You don't have to. And it was an interesting thing because I'm usually one of those people, oh, no. And it gets to the elevator question. It's like, how much is implicit in what we do? Like, how much is just like... Do you always have to be saying the words, oh, I'm sorry, I brushed you. You brushed by me. I know you didn't mean it. Just can't you just keep going? And I'm challenged by both. And like on one hand, I go, we have to be interacting in such a overly polite way just for the sake of it? Or can't we, and why can't we just default to believing the best, that person is going to be sorry.
Without having to say it?
Yeah. Like, why can't we default to that?
That's a great way of thinking.
Right? So why do we have to default to, oh, I'm better, like, and I don't know if the motivation might be true, I am sorry. The motivation might be, I am sorry, I hope this person doesn't fucking think I banged them. You know, right. I want to make sure they don't think that I was banging, you know. Right. And it should be,
It would be more evolved if it was like, of course they didn't mean to run into me.
Exactly.
So there's no reason for them to make this sound with their voice and
just to
gesture with their hands to communicate anything.
Try and like correct or, you know,
add more clarity to the situation.
It's a nice way of looking at it.
Well, you know? People don't default to that.
People don't. They're like, what a dick. You know, the guy bumped into me and didn't say anything. No, exactly. I know. Finding cars, too. Like, people like...
I get angry in cars. Yeah,
me too.
What the fuck's up with that? Like, why don't you...
It's because you're depersonalized, I think. You're, like, contained in the car, and you can't see the person's eyes for the most part. They're not a person. They're a car. And it's much easier to, like... just get angry. And
Jill would always be, you're yelling at me, not at them. I'm like, all right, I know, but it feels good still.
my kids too are like, sometimes like I'll scare them in terms of like
how angry
I can get in the car, you
yeah,
know.
Burke, it's like, Burke, you know, we should too,
they're like, oh, Mr. Meditation, yeah, you're great right? When the guy's like too slow getting off an exit though.
Right, and like, it's just crazy, it's really insane. It's like, what's gonna happen? I'm not gonna get to where I want to get to 10 seconds.
And you can't turn it off. You do have the degree of sort of like, you know what,
I can control it.
The universe is teasing me. Like, this guy is so out of control who's driving over here that it's just teasing me. I'm going to rise above it and just sort of like humor myself.
There's a long escalator down to the subway that I take now from the 34th Street entrance to the F train. Mm-hmm. And it's one escalator. It's a long escalator. It's like, it goes three stories.
Yeah,
it's long, skinny
steep
ones.
Yeah.
But it's a one lane.
One Grand Central.
It's
like
a one lane escalator.
Mm-hmm.
There's no passing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're going down, there's a few people in front of you, and that F train, you can't really see. You think it's there.
When a train pulls up, or you sort of think
it's
does.
Like, come on, people, run. Why are you not running? Fuck, move. And I get mad. Mm-hmm. I get a little angry at these people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, this is part of that book, I think, that you and I know I read. I think I passed it along to you, The Four Agreements.
Yes.
And the reason I get angry, part of it is, all of us, is that as if that those people in front of me are doing it to me. They're not doing it to you. They're just standing there, not paying attention. They're not focused. That's not their train. They need the B or the D. And once you accept that nothing's personal, like the vast majority of things that
go on... Of course
it's
not. They're definitely not doing it to bother you.
That's a clear example where there's no, you know, they don't even know
you're
behind them.
And they're driving too, they're not. They're just, you know, and it's not, they're just oblivious, you know.
But you need to remove, like, I think a lot of the anger is that people take it personally, like people are doing something to them and blocking them and not letting them go.
When I get angry, it's not, it's almost like I'm not like... I guess it is. It's more like, how can you be so oblivious?
Isn't it?
Like,
okay.
Like that,
but
it's not. It's not like you're doing it to me. It's just, this is who you are, and this sucks to say this. But that it's more about who they are as a person, as opposed to they're somehow intentionally doing something to me.
Burke and I were caught in the subway, and it was not coming, so we had to get out of the. We went up to the ground to find a cab. A lot of people obviously were doing it. Subways were fucked up. I see a cab. I go walk over with Burke. Some old man yells over from some corner,
hey,
don't
funny.
You see me waving for the cab?
No,
I'm just
I
like,
don't.
No, I didn't see you waving for the cab.
Yeah.
If I was you, I'd be a little more aggressive and make a move towards the cab. But no, I didn't see you waving for it.
Right.
I can't see everything going on around me. I used to feel such a responsibility.
To clear that matter up?
To A, know about it. Like, oh, this is my fault. I didn't know about that going, that you were there.
Mm-hmm.
We're not capable of knowing all of those things. Instead of, he could have just said, excuse me, sir, I've been waiting for that. Not, don't you see me waiting. Like, he didn't. But that's my point, though. Like, his assumption is that I saw
that
him and
him,
I
he still
fought
blew
him,
off.
Right? And I'm not saying there's people that don't do that. There are people who will do that.
Right.
But the assumption would be nice to be, excuse me, sir. You know what? I don't know if you saw me. I was over
here. But I promise I saw you, and I swear to you, like, I had my hand up before you were here. Or
he doesn't have to do that. Just say, excuse me, I was waiting for the cab. You don't
I'm
have
going
to
say, here's here. I have visual here's, proof.
Here's a little candy for you to help you.
Help you ease your day. Butterscotch.
No, just like, that's it. It's like, fine. I'm like, fine. Go take it. I'm not going to.
Right.
Like, you know, he's a little older too, but
that cab shit though can get heavy though if there's not a lot of cabs and it's like that's the one that came in 20 minutes.
I was really more making the point about awareness though. It's like you just can't be aware of everything around you.
You can't, and I like the whole thing. Like, you know what? You can't expect everybody to be aware because the guy who's driving with his blinker on for 5 miles, like,
well,
you know,
he's
maybe
obviously not aware.
Right, he's obviously not aware. You know, so he's
that doesn't bother
God
me. Much. That's just what's with the ding dong with his blinker on. It
bothers me.
Why does that bother you?
I don't know. It throws
just because you
throws
know
my, it throws my equilibrium off. Like,
once
not,
you know he's
like,
not moving, once the left turn signal's not happening,
you should know the sense of guilt I get though. It's me that's like, oh my right blinker's on. Shit, I would hate myself.
What
right
you, why would you hate yourself? Like, what do you? Because you think so many people didn't pass you on
it's
the right?
Because it's incorrect. Nobody's making a turn. You're driving straight on this road. You're not going anywhere. It's wrong. And the wrongness
insults me. How about if he... Okay, so... Oh, so it's just the wrongness. So if he's in the left lane of a highway and he has his...
But it's not. It's not just this cognitive. He's wrong. He's not turning. It's an emotional thing. It's like things aren't in balance.
Because there's a signal there's a mis-signal being sent.
The symmetry is off, right? I keep seeing this thing blinking to the left, and nobody's going to the left, so the signal's incorrect, and it's just
you keep getting
viscerally.
You keep getting like the input that's wrong. So
that's
you
wrong.
Keep being challenged exactly. by your auto reaction being someone's making a left.
You've nailed it.
All right, I get that. I do get that.
I think that's it.
That's funny.
I've never broken it down quite like that. I think that's it.
Well, you're reacting to it. Look, our natural instincts are left turn signal.
Right.
Somebody's making... So each time, it's forcing your body and your mind to redo it.
Right.
And why do I have to do that?
And right. Maybe you're supposed to shut that off. Like, obviously, the guy's not turning and I should just ignore this. But, you know, maybe you're so trained on it. It's such a you know, Pavlovian thing that you just, you know, it,
right, it
does something to you.
Like it's something like it's constantly being shown the meat and you're watering in my mouth. I don't want to.
Stop this experiment.
Exactly. It's like a bad fucking experiment.
All right. So, you know, next week we're bringing what? We're bringing Arnie Heller on.
We're going
to get to the bottom of some deep shit with him. And
you know, he's going to be a call-in guest, so we'll see where that goes. Excited to talk old-time Swago with somebody. Excited to talk with someone who's never a camper.
I know, and somebody who...
Like, but was part of the fabric of Swago.
Right, like yeah. even though Moose, Krause, Ed, those guys, like they weren't in our... We didn't know them at Swago. We did sort of get to know them over the years. And this is sort of like Arnie... Like I told him, I said, I think you were my head counselor like in 70, maybe
was
my first
he?
Year.
I didn't even think he was there while you were there.
No, he was.
What was your first year again?
76. So, and I thought it was 76. I kind of remember him...
I'd be curious to know
announcing something with space happened in 76. The Voyager, maybe, is something NASA that. Related. I remember him announcing it live.
For some weird reason, I feel like he was there like my first year or two. Like I was 72, and I feel like he wasn't there every year leading up to the year. But we're going to find out next week, aren't we?
I had that vibe too. Like, even when I was there, the first
year,
he had
a gap there. I don't know what happened.
Right,
I don't know what happened.
And maybe it was 77. Maybe he was there then. You know, as far as
the
council. But
we're
going
to find out. Let's
break it down for you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's great. It's great programming.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you. So,
sure.
If you could pick a first guest,
the air conditioning just going.
Someone else's. Hold on. Pause us for a moment. We'll
be pausing. All right, so...
this has been a fucking pleasure, as always.
Always. Love hanging out with you, man.
So this is really reminiscent of what, you know, in a different topics, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the context and the way we're interacting just is so reminiscent of, like, early, you know, CT and then Ski Slope, CT, us hanging.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Revolution and the Swago episode, because that'll be a good energy.
It's going to be awesome. Yeah. It's going to be awesome. So thank you all for listening.
All right. We'll see you next time with our guest, Arnie Heller. And
episode 7.
Until then.
Out.
Bye.